As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Danny Kelly. I'm your host for The View from the Lane, the Athletic's Tottenham Hotspur podcast. We're now releasing two episodes every single week, I'm sure, to national joy and celebration. I'm joined on the podcast today by the Athletic's Jack Pitt-Brook and Charlie Eccleshare, also, of course, from The Athletic. And this is a listener mailbag special with our subscribers to The Athletic asking the questions. It was that, or trying to work out what's going to happen in the Europa Conference. But I think we definitely decided we'd do the questions instead. Before we get to those, though, I'm afraid, and there's a distant clanging of sort of mission bells in the background, we have to get the very latest on the Harry Kane situation. Has anybody got any updates? The last I saw was that City are now finally knuckling down to the idea of 150 million quid. And then Levy's going, well, don't forget the add-ons, chaps.
That has not been communicated to Tottenham yet. I mean, as it stands on Thursday afternoon, there's not really much news. Harry Kane is back in full training at Spurs training ground in Anfield. He didn't travel to Portugal for the Europa Conference League game against Paços de Ferreira. Tottenham, as I understand it, have not yet got a second improved bid from Manchester City. Their position remains that even if that bid does come along, they will still say no to it. So Kane, I think, is still where he's been all summer, which is really waiting for City and Tottenham, hoping that City and Tottenham can reach an agreement. But to be honest, without much cause for optimism that they will.
Charlie, at what stage do Manchester City and Spurs become under pressure from the coming of the closing of the transfer window? City, if they can't get Kane, may want to get somebody else. And Spurs can't get themselves into a situation like they did with Berbatov, where they end up taking, some child reserve from some other club to try and make up the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I expect, we talked about this on Monday, didn't we? There will be some sort of contingency plan in place. I don't, the way Paratici operates, as we've discussed on previous pods, he will have lots of irons in the fire. But yeah, I mean, you certainly don't want to be getting to deadline day and not be sure if he's coming or going. But I do have a slight feeling that, eventually City may snap. And just because we've seen this so many times before with big signings that, at this equivalent point, we're saying, well, the clubs are still miles apart in their valuations. There's no way it can happen. And then all of a sudden, that looming deadline just forces the shackles to come off. And I was talking to someone the other day who was like, we do sometimes give clubs too much credit almost for how strategic they are. Sometimes there is a point at which they will just say, enough's enough. And we really want this player. And okay, we're willing to do it. And clearly, we're going to have to pay this amount. And Levy's made very clear what they're going to have to pay. So I still wouldn't be surprised if there was a curveball. And if it does come down, though, to that very final day, you'd imagine there would have to have been a breakthrough earlier on so that Spurs could start thinking about succession planning. But who knows? Or it might just fizzle out. But I still feel there'll be more twists and turns on this.
Yeah, because you see, and you're right to talk about the way Paratici does his business. You see Lautaro Martinez, etc., Vlahovic being linked with Spurs, but those players can't be. I mean, I don't. Maybe my view of football is illusory. They can't just be sitting there going, "Oh yeah, I've agreed personal terms. Let's see if they sell Kane." That's no good for your sense of self-esteem, is it? That you're on the back burner until they can flog someone else. But I'm sure that agents explain this to players all the time. What's your instinct? Will he be at City by the end of the transfer window, Jack?
I think he's going to stay.
Wow.
I think Levy is so desperate to keep him. And this is not a negotiating position. I think Levy is too stubborn to sell him this summer. And I don't think City want him quite enough to change Levy's mind.
Wow. What about yourself, Charlie? What do you think?
I would put it about 60-40 that he'll stay. Because I don't think it's like totally out of the question. Because although all the information that we're getting suggests that it is going to be extremely difficult, I just feel we have seen breakthroughs happen before. So that's why I'm wavering a little, why I think there is still a chance. But I do think Kane will stay. I should say as well, my mind always goes back with this sort of thing, because I've seen some reports being like, how can he stay now? Bridges have been burnt, et cetera, et cetera. And my mind always goes back to Luis Suarez in April 2013 when he bit Branislav Ivanovic. And after the game, the pundits were saying, no player is bigger than Liverpool. It's a disgrace. He cannot ever play for this club again. Then a few months later, he is desperately trying to get his way out of the club, publicly saying he wants to go to Arsenal, all of this sort of thing. Doesn't get his move, as if he wasn't, in theory, unpopular enough, having just bitten someone. He stays, comes back, first game back, he's available, he plays, scores, and nearly fires Liverpool to the title and is a complete hero. And I'm not saying what Kane has done is comparable in that way, but there's a comparison in that people are wondering, will he be welcomed back? And the reality is, he'll come back. He's so professional. He'll probably score in his first game back, and this will all feel like a horrible dream.
You could also look at Wayne Rooney, who was digging his tunnel out of Old Trafford, got his pay rise.
Rooney had Man United fans outside his house in October 2010, trying to force him not to go to City. And he signed his new contract and won two more Premier League titles at United. And then he tried to get to Chelsea 3 years later and eventually stayed at United all the way through until 2016. So ultimately, football fans can be forgiving, I think, in these kind of situations.
If you're a good enough player, they can be very, very forgiving.
Steven Gerrard tried to go to Chelsea.
He was on the motorway. Last thing on this. Why is it we live in a world? I mean, is it just hive mind? Everyone has to think the same thing. This is a big story, Harry Kane. It's been going on for 7 weeks now. I was on air at TalkSport when it broke and I had to do 3 hours on Harry Kane is leaving. My heart had shrunk to the size of a pea inside my body. But why have we not had one ex-professional footballer, not one, say, actually, it might be a good idea if he stayed there and became a hero or he's under contract? This just doesn't occur to them, does it?
There's an interesting piece on that, actually. Ollie Kay wrote one about I think because it is... it's almost become a truism that, winning trophies and that is desirable and that's what players should aspire to. And I do get that. But he was talking about kind of the Torres leaving Liverpool and a few other examples that it doesn't always, Torres is quite an interesting one because the least happy period of his career was when he actually won all the trophies in his career, more or less, which is quite an interesting kind of contradiction. So, yeah, it doesn't always correlate. I should just say as well, on the point I was making before with Kane and that I do think, all will be forgiven to a large extent. I do wonder if when in kind of the final reckoning, when we look back on Kane, whether this will matter at all. Like, I don't think it will matter in the short term. Next season he'll still be banging goals and providing assists. I wonder if it will have any effect on how he's viewed. But, I mean, what do you think, Danny? Does it matter to you that he's actively trying to leave the club?
Look, I love him less at the present moment, but that's because I think he's allowed himself to be very badly advised. I do think he's a victim of a modern obsession, this idea that, you have to win trophies. And I don't buy the idea that, gentlemen's agreements and all the rest of it. I mean, we all have desires. We're being talked about Harry's desires. We all have desires in life. If he does stay, and I look at you two, you're bringing a little bit of joy to my old ticker. Of course you forgive him. And nothing about him suggested to me that he wouldn't play as hard as he could. These things get forgiven very, very easily, don't they? Because he's such a great player. And so I think Harry Kane will be very easily forgiven.
But do you think it's the way that Kane has gone about it rather than the desire to leave that has upset people, Danny? Because from my point of view, I don't see... I think Kane has the right to want to leave. I mean, it's his career. It's a short career. And yeah, of course he's got this contract, yeah, which has to be abided to. But I think Kane is entitled... I think he's good enough to want to play for a team that's playing the Champions League. I just think that the details of the events the last few months are where it's gone wrong.
I hear you, Jack, but then why would you tie yourself to a 6-year contract?
Well, quite, yeah. That's totally fair enough for Daniel Levy and for Spurs fans to say that. But I don't think... I can certainly sympathise with some of Kane's frustration at the situation.
And it's a frustration shared by the fans, isn't it? Because the club has clearly not just gone backwards since the... I won't say the Champions League final, because the team was already performing badly before the in the run-up to the Champions League final. In the middle of that season, things started to drop away. Oddly enough, I believe that Harry Kane was part of that. Just, this is another one of my theories that I pull out of mid-air. Spurs' game was based on fantastic pressing, a press led by Christian Eriksen, who was the trigger for it. But Harry Kane kept getting injured in tackles. These ankle injuries were caused by him tackling other people, not the other way around. And I think that Spurs decided to cut down on that kind of press to stop Kane getting injured in tackles. And as a result, it fell slightly back on their own lines. And the amazing things they were doing in 16 and 17 were diluted, and gradually it fell away from there.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting with the going about the wrong way, because like... it's quite hard to, it's very hard to get out of Tottenham when you're on a long contract. And yeah, of course, that's no one's fault but his. He signed it, no one forced him to sign it. But I do wonder, I wonder what the right way of going about it is. And B, I wonder how much City could have sort of helped him out here, because it feels odd that it's had to be done in public in such a way. Because you would think, ultimately this comes down to City. And, if you really felt confident they were going to do what they need to do, you could probably sit back and kind of let them do that. And I think it's just quite strange. And I don't know if this comes from City, Jack will know far more about this than me, but City are quite self-conscious of this image of them, and people will laugh, just going out and spending a ton of money and that's all they do. And I know that seems ludicrous, but they have typically not spent 100 million or anything like it on players. I mean, what was it? The record, Jack, was it Diaz before Jack Grealish?
Diaz and Rodri, about 65 million.
Yeah, about that mark. And don't get me wrong, they've signed a ton of players at that 40 and 60, between that kind of bracket. But they haven't tended to go huge on players. And I don't know if... I feel like when City first had that cash injection, they were a lot more bolshy about it. Whereas now it feels like they're a bit more reserved. And I do wonder if they'd kind of been making, bigger moves, then Kane wouldn't have had to kind of manoeuvre himself. But
it's telling how City... I mean, look, and of course the issue here is the contract clause, but City made Jack Grealish's life very easy. Like, Grealish didn't have to say anything about leaving Aston Villa. And City paid £100 million. Grealish could leave without having to do anything to damage his relationship with the Villa fans other than the act of leaving itself. Whereas with Kane, City haven't really made Kane's life easy at all. Like, City have, I think, done the bare minimum, really. They've offered Spurs players. They've offered Spurs 75 plus 25. They've allowed Kane to do the dirty work of harming his relationship with the club and Levy and the fans and Nuno.
I just wonder, Jack, whether City went about it in the wrong order. If they spend the big money, whatever Levy wants, if City wanted that badly, you buy Kane in first and you smash your own transfer record by a matter of 150%, and you let people like me clutch their handkerchiefs and clutch their pearls and go on about your City bullying the whole world of football and all the rest of it. And then you offload one of your other players, I don't know, Bernardo Silva, whoever it is. You've got the money then, and you know that Jack Grealish has got a release clause, and would have been, to me, a much more sensible way of going about the business than the way that we've ended up here now. And what are we, 12 days away from the end of the transfer window?
Yeah, well, this is why, as I said a few minutes ago, I am still wondering, just how much does City want Kane? Because if they really want Kane, they're going about it in quite a funny way. Like they're not offering a big huge amount of money yet. They're not offering enough money to make Daniel Levy change his mind. They're allowing Kane to damage his relationship with Tottenham Hotspur without really giving Kane any guarantee that they will pull him out of the mess and that Kane won't have to clean up the mess himself. You know, they are leaving him a little bit, I think City are leaving Kane a little bit abandoned at the moment.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. This is what we've got planned for you across the Athletic Podcast Network this season. The Ornstein and Chapman podcast has been rebranded as the Athletic Football Podcast. We'll release 4 episodes across the week as our journalists bring you the very best insight into the biggest stories in football and the business of sport. Michael Cox will continue to bring you the smartest analysis of all the big games in the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. Adam Hurry will now host 2 episodes of the Football Clichés podcast every single week with his usual take on the game. There's a brand new Athletic FPL podcast with our fantasy football expert, the FPL General, giving you all the advice you need to stay ahead of your mates and top of the FPL rankings. And the Athletic Podcast Network is also home now to a host of club-specific shows, some of which are going to be releasing multiple episodes every week. And we're now your destination, don't forget, for the Totally Football Show with James Richardson and the Totally Football League Show. And that is it. And then we can't fit any more in. All you've got to do is search for The Athletic in your podcast provider of choice or go to our podcast section on the Athletic app. Not surprisingly, with all of the stuff that I've just mentioned, The Athletic is now the world's biggest football podcast network.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, welcome back to The View from the Lane with me, Danny Kelly, Jack Pitbrook and Charlie Eccleshare. Now, we asked you for questions. They've poured in, a torrent, I would say. We'll try and get through as many as we can. I don't think we're going to get through them all, so don't be disappointed if your question doesn't get answered. And of course, if it doesn't get answered, it probably wasn't a great question anyway. Do better next time. Listen, Carl M was first up. He says, what does a successful season for Spurs look like? Jack?
So back in April when Spurs were starting to look for a new manager, what I was told was that the most important thing when it came to the new manager next season was bringing back some of that sense of alignment and unity which they had at the club under Mauricio Pochettino, which is basically having the manager, the players and the club all pulling in the same direction, which was one of the, looking back, that was the defining feature really of the Pochettino era and has just been evaporated into dust, if that's not a mixed metaphor, over the last 2 years.
It is, but it's perfectly adequate.
So that is, and that, I mean, look, we can talk about third or fourth or fifth, or do they need to win the League Cup or the Europa Conference League or whatever, but I think that sense of unity is really the number one thing that Nuno has to bring back this season, along with everyone else.
I think that's very true, and that's something Levy tried to lean into, didn't he, with his Spurs DNA programme notes before the Villa game. The thing is, though, with that, I do, as much as I agree, I also think so much of that does come down to results ultimately. And so I think it'll be very hard, you know, even if Nuno is really popular in the early weeks because of how he seems, if ultimately the results aren't great, then I think you'll struggle to get that unity. So I do think there's still like a baseline at which they need to hit. And I would say if they're in the top six, then I think Nuno will be able to foster that feeling of, look, we're all in this together, we're working towards something.
But the unity can breed results.
Yeah, it's a bit what comes first, isn't it? But I still feel as well, just like, I said this in a Q&A, I think it was a Q&A a week or so ago, or it was a season preview, and I said I thought, you know, top four and or a trophy, if you are going to put a more tangible aim on it. And I was kind of told, there's no way Spurs can get top four, etc., etc. But we've talked about this before. One of the current big four, one of them will have a disappointing season, most likely. As good as those teams are, it's rare that all of them don't have some sort of crisis. You know, we're talking about clubs like Chelsea, who are in a perpetual state of kind of boom and bust. So I do think it's possible one of those clubs will underachieve, and then it's down to, you know, can a team take advantage? And you know, people say like, oh, but their squad, you know, squad isn't good enough. But, you know, Leicester in, say, 2019-20, where they were third for the most part and then, you know, had injuries and didn't qualify. But no one was saying in summer of 2019, like, oh, yeah, Leicester have got a great squad. They'll be top four. Like, ultimately, that Spurs' squad is good, it's decent, it's adequate. And then it comes down to, have you got a manager who clicks with the players where it works? And I think it's possible it will. And if it does, then I think top four is possible.
Let me ask you a question about, for those of you, you're of course listening to this in audio, but I can see Charlie in vision. What's that in your hand? Is that a lollipop or the mallet of a xylophone?
That's a really good question. It's my son's mini xylophone. I was completely unaware that I was fiddling with it. So thank you.
That's okay.
That.
Just with my musical background, I immediately identified that as the mallet of a xylophone. Very good. Yeah. For me, I'm going to say what I always say about this is, now I realise I'm out of step with younger supporters, modern supporters who've been fed a diet of you must win trophies. For me, supporting Spurs over the years has been about seeing teams play great football. Sometimes they win, sometimes they don't win. I need them to return to playing some kind of decent football. Because I tell you what, if you're a Premier League team, and this includes Manchester City, if you're a Premier League team, you are in a league which contains, according to Deloitte, 11 of the 20 richest football clubs on earth. You cannot guarantee results. You certainly cannot guarantee trophies. And therefore, thinking about, oh, they must win a trophy, I think it's a form of madness myself. When you pay your 60, 70 quid to go to the ground, at least you want to see entertaining football being played. And I know people come back to me and say, well, entertaining football is winning football. Well, it isn't really. So I hope that Nuno can get them playing fast moving and looking like you want to get to hurt the opposition in some way, which we didn't see with Mourinho, well, virtually from the very, very start. Even though when the results were improved, I wasn't seeing that. Listen, I'm going to ask you for a percentage now, because this next question is from Ardavan H. And let's not have any discussion about this. Let's just hear the numbers will speak for themselves here. The percentage chance of finishing in the top four, never mind the top six.
25.
I'll go 30.
I'm less optimistic. I think there's a 10% chance. Thank you for that question, Ardavan, which stopped people who like to talk from talking and just get down to the nitty and indeed the gritty. This is from Jack M., who says, so Sunday was fun, referring to the victory over Manchester City, but how will it translate to the match with Wolves, who aren't as keen on possession?
I think they might be helped by the fact that Wolves are at home and there'll be crowds in for the first time in a long time, which might force Wolves to be a bit more front-footed than had this been a sterile behind-closed-doors game where there'd be no one to say to them, what are we doing? Why aren't we attacking more? So I think Wolves might not be quite as defensive as they would have been otherwise, which I do think will help Tottenham, because I think we know, you know, Nuno's teams can be very effective on a counter-attack. That was certainly the case against City. But I do think this is a theme that will be key to how Spurs do over the course of the season, because certainly teams coming to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium are going to stick a lot of men behind the ball. And so they'll need to find different ways of hurting teams from how we saw on Sunday.
Jack?
I've got no idea. I mean, I've got no idea how Bruno Large's Wolves will set up this season.
It is good that he's called Bruno Large, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's his name.
Bruno Large, yeah.
I also have no idea how Nuno Spurs will play in games that aren't against City. You know, their approach was absolutely perfect for the City game. You know, really well organised, deadly on the break, didn't let City play out, as we talked about last time. How they'll play, you know, but City are a unique force, really, in English football and world football. How you set up against any other team, I mean, who knows? I'm looking forward to finding out, though.
Yeah, my only worry about it is that the traditional method over the last half a decade of unpicking deep-lying teams for Spurs was a piece of lock-picking. Is that the phrase that people use by Christian Eriksen? They certainly haven't got that anymore. Mm-hmm. And Tanguy Ndombele, who was meant to provide some kind of version of that, is so far away from it at the moment. I mean, he's not even appearing in these squad lists, is he? At Wolves, of course, he relied on Ruben Neves doing a kind of quarterbacking role to get teams broken down. But as you say, Wolves were rarely the team doing all the pressing. Incidentally, I noticed the Spurs podcast, how brilliant to see Raul Jimenez talking yesterday about his recovery from his injury and playing football again. As I say, my pet hate in football is really talented people being injured. And that was a horrible thing to happen to him. It was just great to see him up and flying again. Hope he does very badly at the weekend. Other than that, Crack on, Ruben, crack on. This is from John S., and it relates to what we were just saying. It's a slightly different thing about the midfield. What do you make of Dele's role, and who else in the squad could fill it? He says, then he gives us his opinion. Can't imagine Ndombele getting through the amount of work that Dele got through. I mean, I thought that was really interesting, Dele Alli's role. When Spurs were a super-pressing team, he was very good at nicking the ball. And that sort of translated at the weekend is actually tackling for the ball. The problem is all that stuff he used to do at the other end of the pitch, which he now appears to be either incapable of or not encouraged to do, is lost. I'm not sure his future lies, Charlie, as a ball-winning box-to-box midfielder, but he did very well against Manchester City.
Yeah, he did, and that was something we talked about a lot last season, was what's Dele's role going to be? You know, it felt like he was a little lost, and the position he did play, football had sort of moved on, and there wasn't really that role for him. So that would be a really good solution. But again, yeah, it does depend on who the opposition are. It worked really well against City. Whether it will work every week is hard to say. I mean, Lo Celso is not unsuited to that role, given that he's pretty tenacious. You know, he's not as athletic as Dele. I mean, Dele is exceptional in that regard. We saw the stats, how much he ran on the weekend more than anyone else.
Amazing.
And Lo Celso won't do that. But, you know, you can see him doing defensive work, but also being able to get forward. But it will be an important role, because it does look like, you know, for the moment anyway, he's going to play this 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 sort of hybrid. And having a player like Dele who can be that link between midfield and attack is going to be really important.
Does anybody think that Tanguy Ndombele will ever play another game for Spurs?
I don't think he wants to. I mean, clearly he has asked to leave, which is why he's not in the team. The problem is that I think he has unrealistic expectations about where he might go.
Absolutely.
Ndombele seems to... I gather that Ndombele is under the impression that Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich are queuing up to sign him. And, you know, I am a huge Ndombele fan. I absolutely love watching Ndombele. I think he's been a really exciting player to watch and write about over the last two seasons. And I genuinely wish him all the best. But Real Madrid and Barcelona don't have any money.
No.
It's going to be very, very hard for Ndombele to get this move that he wants. And so I think he, you know, a little bit like Kane in a sense, he's kind of caught in limbo at the moment, because he wants to leave Spurs, but the move that he wants, I think he's unlikely to get. Frankly, I think he's less likely to get his move than Kane is to get the one that he wants. And so it's a pickle, and I don't know how it's going to be resolved, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up having to be reintegrated back into the team after the window.
Yeah, that's how I see it. I think like they'll hope, you know, he's not playing, and the hope is that someone will come in, but they'll need to match his $200,000 a week wages. And if they're going to sign him on a permanent, then they'd have to spend a lot, given he came in for around $55 million. I don't think many teams are going to do that. So they'll probably hold out, hope that they can find a buyer. And then when they don't, he'll work his way back into fitness and in the team, probably start by playing some Europa Conference League games post-September. And then who knows? Maybe he'll do what he did last season and get himself back in the team.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a very, very talented ball-playing footballer in there. But nothing he's done in the last 2 years at Spurs, and particularly first very much encouraged by Jose Mourinho and then very much discouraged by Jose Mourinho, suggests that anyone's going to pay that kind of money for him. I'd be very interested in this, because you two are, because of the way you work, are a bit closer to the club than I am. This is from Mark H, who says that, love the Post City podcast, guys. What is your feeling on Nuno behind the scenes? Are the players enjoying his training and management? How would you compare, say, Nuno and Pochettino? Well, ignore the second comparison. Just how are things going with the players? Now, of course, Steven Bergwijn has come out and said, it's great, we're all having a laugh. Because he's picking you, of course, Steven. But what's your feeling about that? How's he getting on with the lads?
Yeah, really very positive from what I've heard. As you say, you know, things change when results aren't good. But the impression I get is that he, and I alluded to this in the big piece I did on Nuno, he does all his work pretty much with the players on the training ground. That's where he comes alive. That's where the players hear from him. He's pretty distant otherwise. You know, he's not someone who's going to be laughing and joking with them in the canteen. But I don't think that really matters, as long as the training's good and the results are good and the players enjoy his training sessions. I mean, it's hard work, a lot of double sessions during pre-season, a lot of work on shape. But they're being worked hard, and a lot harder than they were under Mourinho. And a lot of the players, as we've reported, felt undercooked under Mourinho. There's none of that this time. You know, they feel really sharp, and they want to. You know, they want to work hard. They want to be in the best physical shape. And this was something that happened at Wolves, was that the players it's kind of a virtuous cycle because the players really bought into it when they could see tangible benefits from all the work they were doing. And ditto with Spurs now, you're being worked extremely hard. And then you see, well, you're finishing games stronger than your opponents. You're scoring late against Arsenal. You're holding on reasonably comfortably against City. So whether then he's kind of laughing and joking around at Hotspur Way is sort of irrelevant. So yeah, very, very positive so far.
This is from Sean P, talking about the defence. With Romero and the performances of Dier and Sanchez, how likely is that he might at some stage switch to a back five?
I certainly agree that Tottenham need more stability in defence than they had last season. I think maybe for that reason, I don't think Nuno will change it that much. He's certainly gone into the season with the intention of playing the back four. I think Spurs' players are probably better suited to that for now, in the sense they don't have too many top-class centre-backs. They don't really have a good right wing back, although Tanganga obviously did very well at right back in a four on Sunday. So I think I'd probably expect them to stick with it, but they are still looking for another right back, so or centre back in the last few weeks of the window. So let's see who they manage to bring in.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Okay, welcome back to The View from the Lane. Now, as you've been hearing, we've been answering questions, but kind of ignoring the fact that Spurs have got a fixture, you may be listening to this, after they've had their first leg of the qualifying round of the Europa Conference League. They're playing, of course, against Paços de Ferreira over two legs. Let's assume that they go on okay in this. I'm going to ask you both whether you think it's... Should Spurs try and win the Europa Conference League, Charlie?
Yeah, Jack and I were talking about this earlier today, actually. In the sense it's a trophy and it is a way into the Europa League next season. But I do think they will want
to... You're wrinkling up your nose there as you're speaking.
I'm almost literally turning my nose up at the Europa
you
Conference
are.
League. But I think they would want to do it in such a way that preserves the energy of most of their key players, certainly until the latter stages. So, you know, for this game in Portugal, they've given all 11 starters from the weekend. They've said to them, don't make the trip. They can stay at home. I mean, it still should be a reasonably strong team. There will still be internationals in it. But I imagine, certainly for the group stages, assuming they qualify, we'll see youngsters, fringe players given minutes rather than kind of sapping the energy of the more regular first teamers.
Is that how you feel, Jack, that they shouldn't invest too much in it and hope maybe change that towards the latter stages if they make it?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of me thinks that he's likely to play the younger and fringe players for as long as he can until either Spurs got knocked out or they get within sight of the final. At the same time, I'm just very excited by the prospect of going to Tirana for the final. Spurs are only 14 games away. Unless they finish second in the group, in which case they're 16 games away because they'd have to play another playoff round in February to get through to the round of 16. But I think that'd be tremendous fun, don't you? Like a European final in Albania.
Definitely. Apparently Tirana's really nice.
I've never been to Tirana.
Yeah.
Although you, Charlie, may have an issue. I hope things have changed. I'm seasoned enough to remember when Celtic were going to Albania to play in a European Cup match a million years ago. Their great fullback, Danny McGrain, sported the full beard and they were stopped at the border. And this was under, of course, this is long past King Zog. The communists were in charge by this stage. And Celtic were held at the border for 24 hours and an impasse about Danny McGrain's beard, which they wanted shaved off. And it was only a lot of pressure from UEFA that said, please, let's get this game on. Hopefully, though, you won't be required to shave. And I, too, am looking forward to the final in Tirana. I think they should try and win this competition. Not because I'm trophy hungry, but because, and not in contradiction to what I said before, I would like for the younger Spurs fans that I see around the ground now. Of course, you don't see so many youngsters around football grounds now that it's so expensive to go, but for those who support them through the television and social media and all the rest of it, it'll be nice for them to see them win a trophy. And of course, you know what's going to happen. You don't even have to ask. The final will be Spurs against Roma, Spurs against Mourinho. That is your final of the conference, and that's what UEFA are hoping for. Thank you very much for all of that. Listen, I know what you've been writing. I don't know what you're going to be writing. What has the Athletic, what have we got for, what have you been doing over the last little while, Jack, and what are you going to be doing in the future for us?
I feel like I spend most of my time at the moment trying to figure out what's happening with Harry Kane, which I imagine will remain the case at least until the 31st of August, and possibly even on into the January transfer window and the transfer window next summer if he doesn't get his move. But I'll be going to the home game against Paços de Ferreira next week, and then the Watford game on Sunday week. So I'm just looking forward to seeing how the start of the Nuno era.
Yeah, it is quite a difficult balancing act because Kane, in one sense, there's only one story in town, but obviously there are other lots of subplots, etc. So I wrote a piece that went up on the Athletic yesterday on Jafet Tanganga. Looking at his situation from a transfer perspective, and the expectation is now that he will stay. We reported a couple of weeks ago that Galatasaray had a loan offer accepted. Now it looks like Tanganga will stay, hopefully, and has a real chance to make that right back berth his own. And then the piece kind of looking about kind of him as a player and as a person and why he's so popular with the fans. And then, yeah, I'll be covering the Paços de Ferreira game tonight. So let's see what joys that brings. Hopefully a Dane Scarlett hat-trick, Harry who, etc.
Well, listen, thank you both very, very much indeed. And thank you for listening to this podcast. We'll be having another one in about 3 days' time because it's twice weekly now for The View from the Lane. And by the time the next one is recorded, Charlie will have learned to play basic tunes on his son's mini xylophone. Thanks to Charlie and to Jack. I say thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. If you're not already a subscriber, you can read all of those articles that lads were talking about there by going to theathletic.com/SpursPod. And right now you can sign up with a 33% discount on a full subscription. You'll have the opportunity to ask us questions in future mailbag episodes as well. And we'll be back on Monday. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.